In the 70s, they were an elite unit with names like Brick, Champ, Brian, and Ron. They rose like the phoenix, and then they were gone. Their legend became but a whisper, told by the trees, until now.
We're starting a 24-hour news channel, and we want you.
I'm going to do the thing that God put Ron Burgundy on this earth to do. Have salon-quality hair and read the news. Don't
stop. This just feels right. The news team is back.
Welcome to the 80s, baby.
Is that your foot between my legs?
No.
Oh. It was my hand.
Your hair looks like wet popcorn.
I like the parts of your face that are covered with skin.
That's Jack Lime. Look at him. He's a prince.
He's not that great.
What'd you say? He said you're not that great.
Brick.
I don't read Jet Magazine or Jerry Curl Daily.
What's he doing?
I'm breaking down the barriers of race by assimilation. And on that note,
which one of you convicts with the longest record can pass me the mashed potatoes?
My. Am I right? Say what?
Hey everybody, welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I got a returning guest who we promised you at the end of the Crash Cinema 1, I believe it was, when we said that the film that we're talking about today was coming out, that we'd have him back on. And Gary Nagosian, welcome back.
Nice to be back.
Yes.
Third time on the show.
I know. And this time we're not reviewing a piece of shit like Lords of Salem, so that's always good.
No Rob Zombie on this episode.
No.
Yep. Not at all.
Not at all. And that is a good thing as well. So, as promised, we've got Garo back. And bit of a fan favorite. I've heard quite a few things about that Garo guy's a spitter he is. So, yeah, that's good to hear.
So what are we talking? What move? Why do we have Garo here, Stu? What are we talking about?
Yeah, set us up, Stu.
We're talking about Muppet Christmas Carol. No, I'm just joking. We're talking about Anchorman 2, of course. And, obviously, with the story that you heard about Garo and his fabulous fake Paramount account on Twitter that you would have heard near the end of the Crash Cinema episode and the story behind that, you'd know why we've got him back on here.
Do we want to do a little recap and for people who haven't heard that show?
We can do a short recap if Garo wants to tell for about the 3,000th time in his life.
Give the Cliff's Notes version.
Yeah.
Okay. Back in 2010, Adam McKay, the director of the first Anchorman, tweeted that Paramount did not want to make Anchorman 2. They said, because the first Anchorman didn't make any money overseas. It made like $5 million. So they didn't think it was going to be an earner. So they said no Anchorman 2. And I feel Anchorman is probably one of the best American comedies in like the past 20 years. And I'm like, why wouldn't they make a movie out of Anchorman? It's a movie people actually want, you know? So I created I think it was called Paramount Picks when I first did the Twitter account. And I started doing these posts ridiculing Paramount as, you know, just like coming up with like shitty movie ideas and saying that was what Paramount was going to do. And I brought in, John and ex-friend Low Fidelity come on and help me write tweets, and Adam McKay ended up retweeting one of them, and that started a whole thing where Deadline Hollywood, when it was run by Nikki Fink, picked it up and wrote a story about it, and then basically every single website and entertainment program started to pick up on it, and all of a sudden everyone thought that Adam McKay or Will Ferrell was behind the account, and I kept quiet about it for years. And it wasn't until Paramount said they were going to make Anchorman 2 that I came out and said, hey, it was us. We did it. You know, we were behind it. And that's pretty much the what do you call it? The short version of it?
Yeah.
I mean, if John, unless John wants to add anything.
Well, how many followers did you acquire, Carol?
I think it's almost like 6,000.
Yeah, it was a lot of celebrities too. It was top Hollywood reporters and sources like have retweeted you and followed you and stuff. So it's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. Didn't you say Elizabeth Banks unfollowed you because you made a obese black girl joke about Precious or something?
Yeah, but you know, I mean, that's to be
expected. That's not surprising. She's a bitch anyway. Oh, she was one of those morons that like attacked Sarah Palin as soon as that twit shot the senator in Arizona.
Oh yeah.
Had to be a Tea Party person within 20 minutes, and it turned out to be some lunatic who you know claimed he was listening to radio waves in his head or something.
Yeah, it's shocking.
Yeah, she sits at a poker table and makes useful of her life, right? Useless cow. Oh no, wrong person. I'm thinking of Shannon Elizabeth thing. Oh, it's Elizabeth somebody. Elizabeth Montgomery. I don't know. Somebody.
Elizabeth Banks. I think that. I don't know. One of them. A lot of the Elizabeths.
I just thought it was. I just thought think offending celebrities and having them unfollow you is funny.
I wish people would do it to me more. Just like I get someone like you know Arnold Schwarzenegger follow me and saying this up or just unfollow him. I'd take a screenshot and just like retweet it every day for about a month.
Well, Hunter was unfollowed by Adam Baldwin.
I was unfollowed by Alec Baldwin. Actually, I was actually blocked by Alec Baldwin, I should say, after the last episode where we had Super Mexican on. I actually followed Alec Baldwin and sent him a tweet saying, something like your talk show got outdone by a puppet or the Alf show or some shit. And yeah, I got blocked by Alec Baldwin within 3 minutes. I was gone.
The only famous person who blocked me, I think, is Spike Lee.
Spike Lee, yeah. That's a good thing.
He told me to stop watching Fox News and wake up, and and then he blocked me.
At least he responded to you.
There.
Yeah.
I like to imagine he said it in like the DJ, Senior Love Daddy voice from Do the Right Thing.
Did he then tweet your address that really wasn't your address so people could come attack you?
He's tweeted the address of an elderly couple, and they're currently suing him.
The
New Black Panthers have yet to find me.
Yeah. So anyway, that's okay. So that's Garrow's cliff notes about how fake Paramount kickstarted pretty much, I believe, the Anchorman 2 production into gear. So anyway,
well, you saying that? I don't believe I'm responsible for Anchorman 2 being made.
You know, they won't ever acknowledge it. They will never ever say, "Oh yeah, Garrow." You know, kickstarted this whole thing, and they won't do that. They're too proud and they're too egotistical as well, I should say. But I got to say this. Now, you guys have all seen Anchorman before. Obviously, I know Gary, you have. John, you have. Yep. Hunter, you have, right?
Yeah, I've seen it many times.
I've never seen it before until the other night.
Really?
I'd seen it once before back in 2005 when it hit home video, but I started watching it and got so distracted with other stuff in here that basically the film was playing while I was running around doing other stuff.
Gotcha.
And it was basically just background noise for me. And there's a couple of jokes now. I thought, oh, you know, I didn't really watch it, but there was a couple of jokes there that made me laugh, whatever. But then I knew I had to watch it for this episode. And I sat down and watched it uninterrupted. And I thought it was fucking hysterical. I hadn't laughed so hard in ages. I think the film that made me laugh that much was Ted, was the last one. Now, I watched the theatrical cut. Now, is there a second version out there, a director's cut or extended cut or something?
They've got the, like, unrated. There's that, I don't know if they still do this, but there was that trend for a while where movies came out on DVD unrated, it would have, like, an extra, like, 5 seconds or whatever, but they would act like...
Well, the Anchorman unrated cut had extra scenes and alternate scenes, and mm-hmm. I think I said on another podcast that I preferred the theatrical cut. Because I bought the unrated DVD, and I preferred the PG-13 theatrical cut.
Yeah, well, the theatrical is the one I saw. It was so the extended doesn't make much more of a difference, really. Then,
And I mean, you know, frankly, with comedies, tightness is key. Like you don't the comedies with when there's any fat on a comedy, it just bogs it down. You know, it doesn't add anything if you're not laughing.
You feel the length if a joke isn't working. Or right. if it's like, just it's gone. It was cut for a reason, you know.
Yeah, and so, like, that's one reason, like, I'm not a huge fan of a lot of Judd Apatow movies is because they're comedies that are, like, 3 hours long.
Oh, his films are way too long. I think I've seen a 4-Year-Old Virgin once. Unfortunately, I saw Knocked Up once. I was like, oh, I can't stand this film.
It's just like
funny people
he
didn't
wants
even
to be
bother.
James L. Brooks and a comedian, and it's just kind of, I don't know.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
But that's the thing. When I saw the start of this, when I saw the start of Anchorman, it said an Apatow production. I thought, oh no.
Yeah, he produced these movies.
But yeah,
they're not like his. They don't have his.
They haven't got his finger.
Them.
Yeah, they haven't got his stamp all over it. But yeah, I watched Anchorman 1. I just absolutely thought it was hysterical. I couldn't believe how much it was making me laugh, and consistently all the way through to the end. I think the last couple of minutes might have lagged a little bit, but I mean, geez, you can forgive that for what, you know, the other 90 minutes that were just a very, very funny movie. Which leads us to Anchorman 2. Now, question is, Garrow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm anticipating this. The world wants to know, what did your black friend think of this film? No, I'm just joking.
Your one black friend,
yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, because I do go see, I do drag, because basically my black friend hates any white comedy. He does. And he hates Seth Rogen, he hates Will Ferrell, he hates anybody who's white.
Is it
he
John
Grace? He loves Tyler Perry. No. So I love to drag him to see white comedies, because it upsets him so much. So I did drag him to see Anchorman 2.
Okay, what did you think of it?
I hated it. No, I'm just kidding.
Thank God for that. I was like, Jesus.
I was thinking this episode's about to get really interesting.
Yeah.
But okay, this is how I felt about it. I feel that Anchorman, the first Anchorman, is a 4-star movie. I think it's 4 stars all the way. This one I felt was a 3-star movie. I felt it was very funny, but it had more fat on it than the first movie.
Okay, let's keep it at that. We'll just do a quick round table, see what people think. Okay. Then we'll get straight to the meat and potatoes of the conversation. John, how'd you go with it?
Kind of pretty close to Garrow's opinion. I thought it was there was some fat on it, but there was certainly a lot that made me laugh really hard. One particular scene we'll get into later. And, you know, it's rare these days for a comedy to make me laugh that much anyway, because film comedy is not in its golden era. So, you know, I highly recommend it. I laughed. I don't recommend it to women, though. Women won't find it funny, just as they didn't find the first one funny.
John has got some sort of insane notion that women do not like Anchorman at all.
Yeah, I have a girl of women who are friends who basically listened to that previous episode and told me to yell at John that they do like Anchorman. So
I think they want to just yell at John anyway, regardless of whether he thought women liked it or not.
I think there are certain.
Well, I'm using a scientific method. I have not seen these women, and I've not spoken to these women. I'm just saying that almost every woman I've spoken to does not find Anchorman funny.
Okay, then.
I even had this confirmed at a Christmas party yesterday, so it's like, as a test. I just said, hey, what do you guys think of Anchorman? And guess what the women said.
I think, you know, we got to do. We got to change John's name to Brick. All right. Hannah, how'd you go with it?
All right. I'm pretty close to you guys as well, but I did think it fell into a lot of comedy sequel traps that I really don't like. But overall, I mean, the movie made me laugh quite a bit, and that's where it counts, really. So, I mean, I liked it. I'd give it, like, 3 stars, you know?
Okay, good.
All right. But I'll get into the comedy sequel syndrome when we talk it more in depth.
All right. Well, I am going to say that I thought it was funnier than the first one. I thought it was f***ing brilliant. I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
I was interested in what you thought, Stu, because there was one scene in the movie where I was like, this is where either Stu's laughing really hard or the movie's completely lost him.
Is that with the TV executive boss?
Yeah, with the Australian Richard Branson type.
Man, no, it was actually Rupert Murdoch they're making fun of, not Richard Branson.
No, I thought that was Branson.
I thought it was Murdoch.
It came off as more Branson to me because of the hair and the...
Oh, absolutely,
hair.
The way it looks like Branson, but
they mentioned the airline, too. Like,
it could be. It might be a hybrid of him and Rupert Murdoch, because Murdoch owns Fox News, and this is, what, GNN?
So well, that... Know. I don't think that... It seemed like we spoke very briefly about this, but it was like... you know, we couldn't believe that the movie wasn't going after Fox News, but was actually making more references to CNN and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, like the whole scene.
Fox News didn't exist until the late 90s, so it's it's all CNN, really.
Mm. Like the whole scene where Ron Burgundy is calling the car chase and just making up stuff about what's going on in the car reminded me so much of CNN's coverage of the Boston Marathon bombing, you know, where they were every 5 minutes they had a new suspect of who did the bombing. You know,
it's true.
It's just speculate. We got to fill time, you know.
Yeah.
That was one of the funnier scenes in the film that really made me laugh.
No, I'll tell you the one scene that got me. It got me, and you can't have forgotten it. It was the the dinner scene with the black family.
Oh my god,
that was great.
I sat there with my jaw on the floor, thinking, "How the hell did they get away with all this?" Seriously.
I was in a theater with what I suspect were a lot of college students.
Yeah.
They were just, at those jokes.
Like, really?
Feigning offense. Yeah.
And see, my audience,
I was laughing like it was hysterical. Like,
it was.
But,
my audience was kind of quiet on that too, maybe because I had my black friend next to me. But I was laughing hysterically.
You know, I actually, when I was in the theater, I thought, my God, I wonder how Garrow went with you. Because I knew you were taking your black friend to see this. So I thought, my God, it would have been paid anything to sit with Garrow and his black friend right now and just see the expressions on their face. Because I know damn well Garrow would have been laughing at that, if anything, in the film, even if he didn't like it. I knew that would have got you.
Well, my black friend, he was laughing too. So he actually thought that would be funny. So.
That's because there were black people in the scene, you know?
Yeah.
Oh,
he forgot he was watching a white comedy, you know.
Yeah, he almost felt it was like a Tyler Perry movie and he could enjoy it.
But I mean, that thing built to a crescendo, that whole scene where he just Will Ferrell's trying to act black and then he hits off for the end by saying pipe hitting bitches. I nearly lost bodily functions. I was laughing at art. And my whole audience, like the audience in my theater, were on the floor laughing. They would absolutely, it's because we don't let into our theater, so we can laugh about it. they can't afford it.
The screening I was at was pretty lily white, and everybody was dying during that scene.
Yeah, but it's Dallas, that's why.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there were so many funny scenes in this film that just absolutely cracked me up. The interracial sex thing, even though it's not a sex scene, it's just, you know, it's all implied.
They cut to Shatner
and Different Strokes.
Michelle Nichols and Jackie Robinson.
Yeah.
Well, that was,
And Different Strokes as well. It's just the Drummond family stereo. Oh my God, I was laughing that hard.
There were a lot of younger people. There were a lot of, like, you know, like teenage to early 20s people at my screening, and they did not, I don't think they got those, the Star Trek and Different Strokes jokes. Like, those went right over their heads. I think me and my friend were like the only people laughing during that bit.
Well, there was also that gag. There was like one gag in the movie that cracked me up, that I was the only person laughing in the theater. It was when Ron Burgundy got mad and you did the zoom in on his eye and it just cuts to Jean-Claude Van Damme from Bloodsport yelling. Like, I was dying, but I was the only person in the theater laughing at that.
Yeah, that same here. It was like, I would think me and one other person were laughing at that gag in the theater.
Yeah.
But that's the thing as well. This thing was loaded for bear with jokes. I mean, they just threw in everything but the kitchen sink. I mean, it almost felt like they've had a 9-year break between the first one and the second one that had to do as much as they can to make it funny. And I really think it paid off. I thought this film was just so funny. I mean, I lowered my standards my expectations, I should say, to, you know, it's probably going to stink, but, you know, I'll go watch it anyway. But my God, I was laughing from the offset as well. I mean, the Harrison Ford cameo was funny as. I really laughed at that.
He turns into a were hyena at the end.
Oh, at the end. Yeah.
Well, see, that's what I love about that. This is why I like the Anchorman movies better than the other Adam McKay and Will Ferrell movies, is because it seems like the Anchorman scenario lets them just go insane. Like, how many other movies do you know that has, you know, a Minotaur and the Ghost of Stonewall Jackson in it? I mean,
I was going to say, like, Liam Neeson and as the History Channel news crew,
yeah,
and the having the ghost of Stonewall Jackson just devouring souls.
That was John C. Reilly, wasn't it? The
yeah,
ghost.
It was.
Yeah. Oh, man, that was like I had to one up the actual the end fight at the end of Anchorman with all the news, all that fight they had with the all the news channels at the end of Anchorman 1.
It was all the cable news.
Yeah, the cable. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. But this time they went
like the History Channel and BBC,
the BBC and
MTV.
Kanye West is the MTV VJ.
Was that Kanye West? Was it?
Yeah, that was Kanye.
Oh, my God! I actually like something he was in for once. That's the first and the last.
But speaking of the news team fight in this movie, that kind of brings me to something that kind of did bug me about this movie. Was I thought that there was a lot of rehashing of scenarios and material from the first movie.
Yeah.
Like we have another news team fight. There's another scene where Ron is attacked by an animal and Baxter has to save him. Although it was really funny, like him going, "I banish the Dobie."
Dobie. Yeah.
But how did y'all feel about that? Where
it,
we were,
it didn't bother me. It didn't bother me because it wasn't like it was a desperate act for laughs because there was so many other laughs in the film.
Right.
It was like, you know, it's there, and it didn't really bother me too much because I saw it, and I'm like, I actually didn't register, oh, okay, they're doing this again because they're running short of ideas. They're just like, oh, cool, I get to see another fight. Because they ramped it up to, like, you know, 11 this time around.
Yeah, sure. It seemed like they had, like, crazy ideas they wanted to do the first time, but then, like, DreamWorks was like, you guys are going a little too overboard, you know, no Minotaurs, you can't have any. And then, like, they... You know, now they're at the point where people expect that, you know, where they want the craziness, and they could kind of go like, now we can just go bat crazy on this one. So right. It didn't bother me as much because they kind of took it to the next level. Whereas it's not like an Austin Powers 3 where it's just the same jokes.
I was about to bring up Austin time. Powers as a comparison is like yeah. Austin Powers in the sequels. Does them where they're tiresome. It's like, oh, you're doing the shadows in the tent gag again.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, you're just repeating these jokes. You're not really adding to them or making them funnier or doing anything new with it. And at least in Anchorman 2, they're kind of ramped up as bigger. The bigger sequel set in the 80s, so the jokes are kind of adjusted to that. That's why you got that big news team fight, because this is when cable TV was huge, and you have all these channels with news divisions, so you can actually have these insane, gigantic, you know, jokes.
But the thing that struck me watching this was that Adam McKay and Will Ferrell wrote this together, didn't they?
Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They are sitting on a gold mine because they've got carte blanche to do whatever they want with an Anchorman film because no one's ever going to sit there and say, well, that's not plausible. Why would you do that? That doesn't make any sense. It's just a golden ticket to do whatever you want in an Anchorman film, and people are going to accept it. I mean, in reality, you could do a third, fourth Anchorman film, make it as absolutely stupid as you want, as long as it's funny. And no one's going to sit there and judge it and say, oh, well, you know, it just doesn't make any sense, you know.
Well, it's funny because today, you know, they always act like these movies are in competition when they open at theaters, which I think is ridiculous. Because they're aimed at different audiences, but they're like, The Hobbits beat out Anchorman 2's team or whatever. It's like, is it even the same market? It's not even the same audience. It's a totally different viewer. It's a different set of viewers.
Exactly. Anchorman, I want to watch. The Hobbit, I couldn't care less for.
Right.
Yeah, I've seen both of them. I was way more entertained by Anchorman 2 than I was by The Hobbit.
Yeah.
I started falling asleep, like, in the last half hour of The Hobbit. You know, I'm just like, oh, my God, how long is this dragon chase going to go on for? And then it goes on for, like, a half hour, and then it's like, then the movie just ends, and it's like, oh, wait, I have to wait for the next movie for another half hour of dragon chasing?
That's the problem with the movie is there's no third act. In The Hobbit Part 2.
Yeah.
There's no third act.
Yeah.
That's the issue with it, but, you know.
The one thing I was trying to identify in Anchorman 2 is, like, that whole set piece of him being blind in the lighthouse and the family coming back to live with him, and they raise the shark Dobie.
Yeah.
It seems like there had to be some 70s drama they were making fun of, where some guy went blind and lived in a lighthouse. I almost swear there was a movie like that in the 70s.
Wasn't it like trying to make fun of the Patch of Blue sort of thing? Even though you haven't got the racial thing with Sidney Poitier in there, but I mean, you got the guy finding love again, and you know, he's lost his sight, and I mean, it sort of struck me as it could have been like a small nod to Apache Blue, really. But obviously, Christine Applegate's the love interest, not Sidney Poitier, and you got the female changed to male with Ron Burgundy. But man, that's the sort of thing that came to my mind. But yeah, I mean, they were sort of going for some sort of dramatic. Because I'm thinking they're going, oh, this is a bit of a twist in the tale here.
That tended to be like those 70s melodramas, like Other Side of the Mountain, and that, the movie that had Richard Burton and Peter O'Neill having a romance. I mean, there's all these like weird movies in the 70s that were made for adults that are just, you think about them now, and they're so far-fetched and ridiculous. Other Side of the Mountain, Other Side of Midnight, I think, also Side of the Mountain might do it as well. But, you know, there was just those weird dramas back then that were always based on a handicap or raising an animal or, you know, reconciling a family or whatever. It was pretty goofy. It was like they were making fun of stuff nobody remembers.
But the good thing was they didn't drag that scene out for ages. Yeah, I think it went for about 10 minutes. But they knew, okay, it's got to be cut off here. Enough's enough. We've got the point through. And now keep going back with the laughs. But the scene that got me, I mean, and there was a lot of them in this film. Holy shit. When he went to go pick up the old crew and he went to see... God. Is it Camp?
Champ.
The Dave Koechner character.
Oh, he's got the fried bats. Because what was he called them? Was it the Chicken of the Cave?
Chicken of the Cave. Yep,
Chicken of the Cave.
You got to realize that you got to one of us to swipe at those fast food stores that don't really sell chicken and they're selling other shit. Probably is the case.
Well, the big catch line for tuna fish in the 70s was Chicken of the Sea. So
was it?
Yeah, back in the 70s. So it's a reference to that.
Let me ask you guys this. Was there any eye roll moments in this film for you?
I felt that the one part of the movie that I thought just didn't work was the subplot between Brick and Kristen Wiig.
Yes. It was almost like we
need to get Kristen Wiig in this movie because she's hot right now.
Yeah. See, that was the one part where I was kind of like, okay, this isn't kind of working because Brick works best when you can't give Brick his own subplot. He's got to be with the news team. That's where he's funny, you know? And him branching out on his own, it just didn't work.
The only gag in that subplot that I thought was really funny, though, was Kristen Wiig wearing Tidy Whitey's.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Do you think that subplot was done at the behest of Steve Carell, or they did it for him?
I think they probably did it for him.
Yeah, because it seemed like to me with this film that, and I'll give credit where credit's due with Paul Rudd and Steve Carell. I mean, they're huge stars now, especially Steve Carell. Even Paul Rudd's really getting up there, you know, if not already.
Yeah. Paul Rudd's now a Marvel superhero, so.
Yeah, Ant-Man.
He's gonna be Ant-Man.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
And for them still to take like a second banana to Ron Burgundy in this film or Will Ferrell, it shows a sign of they're a really close-knit sort of comedy troupe. You know, because it could have been very easy for Steve Carell to say, look, you know, it's been too long. I don't think I want to come back and do this character again. He doesn't do much. He doesn't say much. And when he does it doesn't make any sense. But, you know, credit where credit's due, they came back. They all slipped back into character so easy. It's like, you wouldn't know it was only a decade later, honestly.
And, you know, these are... The Anchorman movies really helped launch a lot of their careers.
Exactly. Too. So I think a lot of them do it as a gratitude for having that.
Like, Steve Carell in Anchorman, that was pre 40-Year-Old Virgin, you know?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
And I think basically they know what... They know that Anchorman's a classic. They know that it's kind of like one of the best movies they'll ever be in. And they probably really like their characters. They enjoy playing those characters. So why not come back and do it and have fun like they did during the first movie? They always say one of the biggest blasts they ever had was making the first Anchorman. So why wouldn't you want to go back and do it all over again?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, you can just imagine being on the set of that film. It just would have been hysterical, really.
Well, and I'm just glad. Here's the thing about I was really worried about before I saw Anchorman 2, and I'm glad it never really happened. Mm. Was, you know, the last movie Adam McKay and Will Ferrell did was The Other Guys.
Okay.
And it's probably the worst movie they've made. It's it has funny parts in it, but the last section of the movie is this, like, it's a total preach fest about, like, corporate greed and Ponzi schemes, and like the ending credit sequence is like a graph and a presentation on how Ponzi schemes work and are happened, and you know how we need to you know, stop Wall. It's a, like an Occupy Wall Street type statement.
Sounds interesting, but it's not very good, you're saying.
Well, I mean, it's not interesting, and it's not, I mean, it's not even an interesting statement. It's just typical, like, white Hollywood liberal stuff. But
wasn't this when McKay was, like, having Twitter fights with John Nolte?
Yeah, although their Twitter fight was very cordial. It didn't ever turn into, like, insult. Adam McKay actually was like, yeah, you guys, like, he told him in Ezra Doulas that they were pretty cool guys, and, like, you know, glad we could have a good discussion.
It wasn't on the level of Alec Baldwin and Super Mexicans fight scene.
No. Like, Adam McKay is like a human being.
Yeah. but one thing I do want to see of, and I didn't know Adam McKay, I'm actually starting to really like this guy as a filmmaker. I haven't seen many of his films. I think only Anchorman 1 and 2. Now, he did Step Brothers with Will Ferrell. Step Brothers,
which is really funny.
Is it? I remember someone recommending it to me. Now, who did Walk Hard? Was that him as well?
No, that was Jake Kasdan.
Lawrence Kasdan's son.
Okay.
But what I was going to say was I was really worried that Anchorman 2 was going to turn into another sort of like message preach fest, you know? Because I was like, oh, they're going to take a lot of swipes at Fox News and all that stuff. And it never really happened.
Yeah, it bubbled beneath the surface, but it didn't really blow up in your face at all. It didn't become
There were a couple little bits where, you know, they did global warming story or something, but, you know, it never really flared up. Like it pretty much ruined the other guys.
Speaking
did,
of that,
did anybody else here see that movie, or did
I never
me?
Saw it? I never saw I it because it. Of all the whining on the Breitbart site about it. So I just like.
What did you think of it, Garrow?
I thought there was a lot of funny stuff in it. You know, I enjoyed it, and maybe it's also because it came out right after Cop Out, and I hated Cop Out so much.
Yeah.
And I didn't like this, Cop Out either.
Yeah, and this one was actually funny. Like there was a lot. Like I loved the whole like subplot about Will Ferrell having, before he was a cop, he had this alternate personality Gator who was like a pimp, you know, and that was like hysterical. I understand what you're getting with the political stuff, and you know, it does kind of start to choke the movie a little bit towards the end, but I still liked it better than Talladega Nights, because here's my problem with Talladega Nights is that there's too much story. Like they're adhering to too much story in Talladega Nights to where it just can't become a gag fest, because they got to hit the beats of every single sports story within the movie. Whereas the Anchorman movies I like better because there's like a story, but it never really, you know, is that important. You know, it's just there for the jokes.
I loved Talladega Nights, though. I think that movie's hysterical as well.
I hate Talladega Nights. You're crazy. That's terrible.
the dinner scene is one of the best things ever they've done.
Actually, one film I do have on my shelf out here, Blu-ray got sent actually in a box of other stuff, was Casa de mi Padre with Will Ferrell, and I've not seen
it yet.
That's
horrible.
Is it really?
I absolutely love
I remember Casa. Yeah, I remember Garrow hearing you tell me say another time you liked it.
I saw it at a theater in Tampa. It was me and one other person in the theater, and opening day. Yeah. And I gotta tell you, I was laughing the entire movie. Maybe because
why did you think it was funny? Because I did not get it. Like I was just staring at the.
Isn't
movie
it played though. Straight? It's not played for laughs at all.
It's played straight, but it's making fun of the way bad movies are made in a way.
Yeah.
And to me, it just like it made me laugh. Like all the kind of horror. Like it was kind of like taking like what the Grindhouse movies do and do kind of like they're like, but with like less of the snark, I feel.
Okay.
You know, and I don't know. It just made me laugh.
Yeah. Well, I will definitely be watching that one. So I'm like, oh, I've got no Will Ferrell films apart from, well, I think that. I think it's the only one I've got. I was looking for other stuff to watch of his after Anchorman before I watched Anchorman 2, and didn't have Talladega Nights, didn't have Step Brothers, didn't have I think Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, which I'm not sitting through that again ever. I did not want to sit through that. So
yeah, you don't need to watch that again.
Blades of Glory is a good one.
Okay. Yeah. No, I don't know that one either.
I was about to say I have only enjoyed the Anchorman movies and Blades of Glory. His other movies do not amuse me that much.
Okay.
I think Step Brothers is really funny, but
yeah, I enjoy Step Brothers a lot.
Yeah.
Well, I'll definitely check those out. What's some other scenes that got you laughing? I'll tell you one that got me. Was that when they had the car chase on the screen and they cut back to Yasser Arafat and Chris Damberg goes, we don't want to watch no car chase. And Yasser Arafat goes, I want to watch the car chase.
I would like to watch the car chase.
I would like to watch the car chase.
Well, the scene that hurt my face was the cruise control RV scene.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah.
Where they're like, Ron, why do you have these bowling balls here? And what about this aquarium with scorpions? Yeah. Oh, it's a long story. Hey, Ron, this is the cruise control. Only controlled the speed and not the driving. Oh, and then the RV flipped. And then all those objects they mentioned hit them in the face or something.
He's like, good thing I got this deep fryer in the back.
Yeah. the hot fry like hits the champ in the face. And the scorpions fly into Ron's mustache and pinch him.
Did you guys like
that was a perfect gag right there. That was like brilliant. That had my face hurting.
The name of the actual prophylactic as well got me laughing my ass off.
Yeah, was the equivalent of the Sex Panther scene in the first movie,
which they did bring the Sex Panther back towards the end.
Sex Panther, like what was it? It was like one of the like a 70s superhero show moment.
Well, it's like a grenade. He's like Sex Power Panthers activate.
Well, do you know what the whole Sex Panther thing is? It's they say that the actual urine of a panther is the most pungent stench on earth.
Right. Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so that's what they're saying because he used the thing to get women and they're just all reviled by the actual smell of it.
It smells like Bigfoot's dick. It's worse than that time the raccoon got stuck in the copier.
Speaking of, what did you guys think of the black chick? Come on, I want
to
hear it.
Well, that's the main reason I got my black friend to go with me, because he thinks she's hot. So,
well, let me say this, your black friend is very, very correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but he you should see some of the girls he's had sex with. Some of them are not that good looking.
He goes for Irish women, I thought.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, he dated an Irish woman, and now he's married to a Chinese woman from China.
Oh, okay.
Is that true?
Hey, bartender joke.
It's true.
It's true. You know what? I really just feel like ditching my life here for about a week and just coming to Boston just to meet your black friend. it's worth it.
And it's like, because I think maybe dated one or two black women his entire life. And I always tell him, I'm blacker than he is. You know, I always tell him that.
Yeah.
It's like Fred Robertson or black women are just mean, man.
Actually, speaking
Fred
of that.
Fred Williamson.
Fred Robertson. What
speaking of Fred, I'm actually surprised you got Fred Willard back in this film after the little pants around the ankle scandal a couple of years back.
Yeah, they got Fred Willard and Chris Parnell back in the action.
I don't think anybody cares that some guy whacks off in the theater anymore. I think there's just way more stuff to be upset about.
Well, that and, you know, back when Paul Rubens got caught, A, he was a child star, but B, we didn't have the insane cycle of news and information back then that we have now. So something like that would get fixated on and it would destroy your career. Whereas now it's like Fred Willard got caught with his pants around his ankles in a porn theater. Oh, okay. And then just on to the next thing.
He's a cult comedic character actor. Nobody cared. It was like, oh, he acts weird. We kind of expect that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that big of a deal. The only way people would even care if someone gets, you know, is found whacking off at theater if it was like Brad Pitt. Then it would be like, you know, on every single headline news story or whatever, but it's Fred Willard. It's like
it's a porn theater. Like, what do you think people go there to do?
It's all for the sake of art.
I mean, like, nobody's sitting there going, "Oh, behind the green door, this is really like fantastic filmmaking." I mean,
it's boring. I know people who insist that.
I know people who absolutely insist those stupid things are art.
They're there so you can rub one out.
Well, yeah, they're fucking back up. There's your bleep segment right there.
Well, let me put it this way. The most shocking part of the Fred Willard story is that there's still actual porn theaters. That was the most shocking.
Yeah, that's what freaked me out. I was like, really?
I thought they said like private booths at like weird stores. And
there is one on Federal Boulevard in Denver.
I'm sure there is, John. Thanks for the heads up on that.
I drove by, and it was behind a Dollar Tree in a very scary neighborhood. And I was like, oh, my God, they still exist.
Yeah, there was actually one right down the street from my school in Memphis, come to think of it.
And you can find John Grace there at Booth 5 on Tuesday nights.
Well, in Boston, when I was a teenager, because I used to go down to Chinatown to go to the Pagoda Theater to go watch Kung Fu movies, and there was this one, there was like two porno theaters. One of them was called the Art Theater.
Cool.
And it showed gay porno. And I just thought it was weird that the gay porno theater was called the Art Theater. Like it was going to trick people, you know?
It's because they're painting with their d***.
Well, who else goes to art house theaters except gay people? So it kind of makes sense.
But the straight porno theater was called the Pilgrim.
That sounds gayer than the Art Theater.
I know. I think it should be reversed. It should have a change of format there.
Pilgrim.
But now everything's gone there. They totally redid Chinatown. Now it's hardly anything Chinese there. All the Chinese moved to Quincy.
All right. A little bit of Boston history. Yeah. What else we got about Anchorman 2? I mean,
I could tell you two scenes I really, really loved. I love the scene where he goes, you know, to visit Veronica Corningstone, and she's dating Greg Kinnear. Like that whole scene.
Oh,
hysterical.
Yeah.
And the other one was
a running gag with like, get out of my mind.
But it actually paid off towards the end. It wasn't like it was a throwaway line.
No, it had a great payoff. It was a good
running joke. Like his son was like, get out of my mind.
And I love them smoking crack on air, you know? And then they arrest him. They're like, well, it looks like you can't smoke crack on air, can you?
What got me was Greg Kinnear's ponytail, that little ponytail he used to have back in the 80s and 90s. Just like those little Wall Street ponytails. Absolutely hysterical it was.
I mean, the one thing we can say is that the movie didn't disappoint. It was definitely like not a bad sequel. Like there are
I laughed the whole time.
Yeah, and this one was not. This was no Caddyshack 2.
No, certainly not.
It was no Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah, no Ghostbusters.
It was no Weekend at Bernie's 2.
And for Stewart, it was no Crocodile Dundee 2.
Yeah. It was no Crocodile Dundee either, thank God.
It was no Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles, let's put it that way.
Oh.
It was no Young Einstein, at least.
Could anybody here identify with the scene where the Australian guy's talking and they couldn't understand anything he said?
Yeah, probably you lot.
Anybody here who's not Stu? Anybody?
I couldn't understand him. What are you talking about? Thinking, who the hell is this guy? I really listened to him.
I have no idea what you just said, Stu.
Off. No, I'm just...
Probably my favorite one-liner was she says, you covet acting like you're Julius Caesar. He goes, I don't follow the NBA.
No, but with the actor playing the Australian guy, I'm listening to him going, what the hell is it? Where's this guy from? He's going, oh my God, he's bloody Australian. When I listened to him, because I thought it was an American actually playing an Australian. He's actually an Australian actor. I didn't realize. I never knew who he was.
It wasn't like Quentin Tarantino playing an Australian in Django Unchained.
Oh, with the fast food gut?
It's the worst Australian accent. I mean, mine's pretty bad, but I'm not in movies, so it's okay.
No, I haven't heard Tarantino's yet, but yours is pretty bad.
Oh, Stuart.
Jim Dirks and you have a running competition about who does the worst. John does a good half-decent one. I don't know. I've never heard Garrow do one. But just for the record, John, we don't wake up in this country every morning and say, the radiator's damaged to the core. Nobody says that here, right? So I don't know why you got some sort of insane vision that we do.
And I assume that's how the people talk down there.
When I took my car into the shop a few years back, none of them even said to me, the radiator's damaged to the core. No one talks like that here. Only you two.
Hey, Stuart, I got a question for you.
Yes.
Okay. Like, you're a parent, right?
Yes.
When you were raising your kids, did you, like, here in America, like, people are afraid of, like, you know, child predators, so they kind of have to watch their kids and stuff like that. Did you, like, when you were raising your kid, were you, like, afraid of dingoes, you know?
So who else found some other scenes funny in Anchorman 2? Let me set the record straight now on this show. Never seen a dingo in my life. Dingoes do not inhabit Victoria, where I live. Dingoes do not inhabit New South Wales. They do not inhabit Queensland. They do not inhabit Western Australia. They only found out in the Northern Territory. Okay.
But Stu, to be fair, your favorite movie is A Cry in the Dark, right?
So who found some other scenes funny in Anchorman 2? As for kangaroos, I've only ever seen one in my life. Yes, they do inhabit Victoria, but I've only ever seen one in my life, and that was only a few months back. Yeah. So anyway, let's finish up with Anchorman 2. What do you guys reckon? Do you want a third one or not? Or we leave it at 2?
I would only want a third one if they wanted to make a third one. I want them to be like, we have another story to tell. We have more ludicrous jokes we want to get out there. Then I'd be like all for it, because why Anchorman 2 works is because it wasn't motivated by the first one was a hit, let's go make another one so we can make more money.
Yeah.
If it's the same thing where it's just like, we really want to make this movie because we think it can be funny, I'm all for Anchorman 3.
Yeah.
About you, Hannah? You feel the same way?
Okay. I don't have anything to add to that.
All right. Now, the question I got for you, Garrow, is you've seen Anchorman 2 after all these years. Does this put to bed fake Paramount and the Twitter account?
No, I mean, I'm still going to... Here's the thing. I use it... You know, I don't post there every day like I used to because I don't need to. Yeah. But if I see a funny joke, you know, that can, you know, satirize Hollywood and I think of something, I'll put it up there, you know? I'll write it, you know, and put it up there. It's just, you know, something that I can, you know, tell off-color Hollywood jokes.
Or you can come on here for that as well and do it in an audible fashion.
Exactly.
What was the most controversial fake Paramount tweet?
I think it was the one that me and Low Fidelity wrote, which was the one about Gabri Sidibe and Monique are going to be in our next big Oscar contender for next year, Hungry Hungry Hippos, based on the novel by Sapphire.
You know what? You know what? Hunter actually knew that from the old episode. He just wanted to hear you say it again. That was all.
I couldn't remember exactly what the joke was, so I was like...
Oh, I could. I still wanted to hear it again, though. I could hear it again and again.
Yeah. And then I did one recently that people were saying was creepy, where... do you remember when that little kid who had cancer dressed up as Batman and saved San Francisco or something? Yeah, I wrote, you know, Joel Schumacher has optioned the rights to make a Bat Kid movie. It's a movie that only Victor Salva will like.
Oh, no!
Oh, yeah.
Oh. You've gone too far, fake Paramount.
Oh.
So, yeah, that was one that I did
that
recently.
That is creepy.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing, though. I'm going to tweet that picture of that Batman with a on its head. I'm going to tag.
Wasn't that? Oh, no, don't do that.
That's James Franco, isn't it?
Yeah, I got it from James Franco. He tweeted it, and then I grabbed it.
Where the f*** did it come from?
I have no idea. We don't know where James Franco's spending his nights.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk on the interwebs.
All right, Garrow, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, you'll have to hear the whole unedited thing, which you'll never will. You've got the heavily truncated version of this one, people.
I just love how I was able to derail it so many times.
Yeah. We don't need a great deal of help there to derail this show, Justice. It's basically like the scene in Anchorman 2. Yeah, you got the cruise control on the show, but no one's driving a damn thing. It's eventually going to crash and burn after a while. All right.
And you're going to get grease on your face, hot grease.
Yeah, and a bowling ball straight in the nuts. All right.
Scorpion on your face.
Yeah. All right. Garrow, plug your old shit.
Okay, I got a movie. coming out called Dangerous People. You can see the trailer on Vimeo. The
When's
trailer
it
has
coming
Lucy.
Out? My Jesus Christ.
Okay. Okay, you know what? I can promote this on my Dangerous People page so people have to listen. This is an update on what's happening with the movie.
Good.
I have finished my edit of the film, but my cinematographer is going to do a polish of my edit, and he's going to do the color correcting and the sound mixing. Unfortunately, he has been sick, and he was in the hospital for a while, and he's recovering now. So as soon as he is fully recovered, we are going to finish the last part of post-production, and we hope to have that done by early next year, and then hopefully we're going to hit the festival circuit.
Okay, who's your other editor?
His name is Wheat. And he is, he's my, what?
I think I know this guy.
He's in Florida. Do you know him?
Yeah, that's him. He worked on a few movies that a friend of mine made, like Cigarette Girl.
Oh, yeah, Cigarette Girl. That's the trailer I saw, and that's what I wanted, that's why I wanted him to do my movie.
Gosh, that's so cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Wheat's a great guy.
Yeah, but the thing was, I mean, there's a YouTube video out there Garrow put out of the original cut, the original editor, and the editor he's got now. And I mean, I think you're being a bit harsh on the original editor that you had.
Well, no, he was the original cinematographer.
Cinematographer. I mean, I think you're being pretty harsh on him, honestly.
Well, the reason I'm harsh on him is because he would shoot everything in close-up. He would never shoot, like, a master shot. And he would always argue with me that he knew better. And like some scenes that when I tried to go edit were impossible to edit together because all it was close up of people's faces. Then on top of that, he was an asshole and he made promises that he never had no intention of ever coming through on.
This is what I was waiting for.
Was this Wheat?
No.
Wheat came in and replaced him.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, and we.
I was gonna say, I remember him being a really good guy.
No, Wheat is one of the best people I ever worked with. He really is. Me and him worked great together. Like any movie I do from now on, I want him to be the cinematographer on. That's how much I like Wheat. So
he did a fantastic job on Cigarette Girl, and you know some other stuff he worked with Mike McCarthy on.
And he did a great job with my movie. Like, you know, if you watch that new trailer, you look at a lot of those shots, that stuff that, you know, he came up with and we collaborated on. And he's real. Like, here's the thing with my old director photographer, like we would never have a meeting on what we wanted the movie to look like. He would just be like, oh, we'll figure it out when we get on set. We'll figure it out when we get on set. And then I would make suggestions and he would ignore me. And with Wheat, it was like we would talk about it. The day before the shoot, we would go over, you know, what we wanted that day, what we wanted it to look like. And then we would, like, when we got into the scene, we would improvise a bit and be like, you know, wouldn't it be cool if we did this? And it'd be like, yeah, let's try it out, you know, and stuff like that. And it was a very collaborative, it was very collaborative between us. And I felt it made the movie even better. And I like I said, I loved working with him. The other guy, I hate, and I hope he gets and dies.
That's the whole reason why I brought this up. I don't think you're being too harsh at all, but I was waiting for this crescendo to build up with you.
Yeah, I'm tripping, that's the whole reason why I brought it up.
I'm tripping out though. That's just such a small world moment right there.
Yeah.
I was like, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
One more thing, Garrow. I really think you're being a bit too harsh on Barack Obama as well. I think he's a good president.
Oh, he is the worst.
I might take you to task one day on this show about I'm actually warming to Barack Obama how good he is.
Well, what I love to do on my Facebook is to post really negative about Barack Obama and then just watch my friends go down, the number of friends I have.
I want you to do this for me now, okay? This is for Super Mexican as well. Can you never believe that you said this? What did you say Tyler Perry did with Barack Obama?
Oh, I think they've totally... I think Tyler Perry and Barack Obama had some really stank anal sex together. That's what I think.
I think Tyler Perry blew him. I mean...
I don't doubt it.
Because, look at that, like, jaw. I mean, that's made for oral sex, you know?
Like, there's a picture of them. I posted on my Facebook a bunch of times of them, no, like, hugging. And It is like the most like sexually charged hug I've ever seen in my life. Like, you could tell that you couldn't see it because it was blocked, but you could tell they were both sporting boners, you know, just by the way they were like, you know, just going right at it for that hug. Oh, it's like we're gonna fucking like just grab each other.
Feel our hey Garrow against each other. What? Hey Garrow, was there a blackboarded guy behind him giving off sign language?
Yeah, I think there was.
I think Barack Obama and Tyler Perry, I think the way they have sex is like the George Takei way, where they wrestle and blow each other. I think that's what they do.
Well, what I loved recently was that whole thing with where he was at the Mandela funeral and he was like, you know, taking selfies with that chick, and everyone was like, oh, look at him, like, you know, flirting with that chick. And it's like, no guy, when he's right next to his supposed wife, is gonna be flirting with a girl. That was his girlfriend. Like, hey girlfriend, you want to take some selfies? That's what it was like.
Actually, you know that guy that was behind Obama on the stand at the Mandela funeral, and they said he was actually having a schizophrenic episode. He's actually doing another code of sign language that people didn't know, where he'd said, yes, this man on the stage in front of me did suck Tyler Perry's
Well, can I just say something? Any celebrities who were following me on Fake Paramount right now, after they listen to this podcast, they're not going to be following me anymore.
Yeah. You got your wish, didn't you?
They are gone. Because you know what? We made fun of the precious Obama. So, goodbye. Hollywood does not like you making fun of their Obama. What? You make fun of Obama? Get the hell out of here.
Oh, God. Here we go.
You're banned. Banned.
Does your black friend like Obama?
Oh, of course he does. Because he's black.
You realize that this is going to severely hurt your chances of getting into Sundance, right?
Whatever. But here's the thing. Here's the funny thing about my black friend, okay? I'm going to set up. Like, he totally believes that Obama is a tool of the Illuminati, but he still supports him because he's black.
Yes. Okay.
So that's what goes on there.
Anything else to plug, Garrow?
He wanted to make sure we knew that Tyler Perry has plugged Barack Obama's butthole.
Yeah. What I was trying to plug was my total banishment from Hollywood. But yeah, I got Dangerous People, that's coming out. You can also check out the trailer for Actors Apocalypse, which I will put on Vimeo On Demand someday. I keep saying I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it.
Wait, before you go, you got to say that line for me from Actress Apocalypse.
Wait, which one?
Look at the boom. Look at the boom. Do you remember that?
Look at the boom.
do you remember the line I'm talking about?
It would be like, I don't know. I had so many lines.
It's the one where the actress is going about this being a shoddy set, and he said something about the electrics, and you go, look at the boom, look at the boom.
He goes, would a fake set not have a fancy light like that over there? Look at the boom.
I myself when I was watching, like, here's Garrow going, look at the boom, look at the boom.
Well, because, you know, that whole movie is making fun of, like, you know, independent filmmakers who don't know what the f*** they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, so it was, you know, and when you've dabbled in that a bit, the character I play is based off of someone I knew, but then I kind of used him just as a jumping point off and went in other directions with it, too, which is weird. And here's the other thing. We shot Actors Apocalypse right after the first Anchorman, and I was actually kind of influenced by Anchorman when we shot Actors Apocalypse. You can't really see it in the movie. It's just, like, something that was in me. It was, like, I saw how, like, you know, how those people, like, totally committed to that character, so I was, like, I can't half-ass, you know, this character I'm playing. I gotta totally commit to his idiocy.
Because the guy who plays your brother in the film is just off his nut and just wild and curse a lot, and you don't curse at all in the film, do you?
I think I'd maybe once, hardly ever. Yeah. And it basically it was like, because the whole thing with that movie was, Rich had originally shot a pilot for that movie with Greg playing Vance Lincoln, someone else playing a different version of my character. But the other actor that he had was trying to be as outrageous as Greg was supposed to be. And that's not what Rich wanted. Rich wanted someone to be the straight guy. And I said, I know how to do this. Let's make this movie, and I will play the straight guy the way I think you need it. And it worked out perfectly, you know, because in comedy there always has to be kind of a straight guy. And, you know, I understood that.
Yeah.
I need to see that movie.
What? Oh, if you want, I can send you. I like a private link on YouTube. I can send you a link
that
you can watch.
Garrett sent it to me, yeah.
Yeah. I'm eventually going to put it up on Vimeo On Demand, so keep a lookout for that. I have Fake Paramount at Fake Paramount on Twitter, and my name is Garo Nagosian. If you want to become friends on Facebook, you can try typing in that name. I'll probably won't be friends with any of you on Facebook.
You might commit a hate crime when trying to type in his last name. So.
Yeah. Yeah, my
you'll
last...
be blocked from Facebook.
Yeah,
my last name is almost... a hateful word for black people, but it's spelled
O-B-A-M-A-S-S.
Yeah, it's Obama-nation. I don't have anything else to plug.
No worries. Well, now that we've got your plugs and your political beliefs out the way, you are a liberal, aren't you?
No, I am not a liberal. I am a... You're just winding me up.
I've been waiting months to do this. Months. You have no idea.
No, I am not. I think white liberals are ruining this country. Ruining it.
This show's not even about movies anymore.
It's not. No. It's totally become a current affairs and political...
But here's the thing. When I say, oh, I can't stand white liberals, people are like, what are you, a Republican? I'm like, no, I'm not a Republican.
You're a big critic of Bush, you know?
Yeah, I didn't like Bush. I thought Bush sucked too. I think Republicans and Democrats are both f***ing horrible. And I think as long as we keep voting for them, we're going to have, it's going to be shit. We got to learn to vote outside the Republican and Democrats. You know, they're both bought off. They're both owned by someone or something. And you vote for both of them, they both end up the same. Everyone was like, oh, Obama's going to be so different. And the next thing you know, he wants to bomb Syria. The NSA is worse than ever. You know, it doesn't matter. Democrats, Republicans, they're the same thing.
You can keep your health plan.
Yeah, you can keep your health plan. Yeah.
Boy, howdy. That's just a f***ing lie.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. They're both awful. I'm not a fan of them. But white liberals are the people who, like, you know, they're the ones who make a hero out of Trayvon Martin, a punk kid. You know, who,
here we go. Here we go.
This is what you were waiting for. Okay. Like everyone, this is why the media sucks. Okay, is that, you know? It's like they totally whitewashed Trayvon Martin. Like Trayvon Martin. Okay, he was kicked out of school three times, and his parents had the other two reasons why he was kicked out of school like sealed. Like we don't know why. He was kicked out of school two other times. Now, if he was such a great kid, don't you think we should be able to see why he was kicked out of school two other times?
Is it suppressed? Is it?
It's suppressed. Yeah, because he's underage, they can you know seal it so we don't see it. I mean,
the big thing the media did with that story too was like when they reported it, they put out pictures of him as a child.
Yep.
When really, I mean, he was like a strapping, you know. How old was he? Like 17?
Yeah, he was 17.
He was 17.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, you know, that's not a 9-year-old, you know.
Yeah.
I'd love to see Garo on Fox and Friends. just co-host that show and be like the absolute paradox. You have like Garo and seated next to Anna Koyman.
Like what I wanted to do when, because all these stupid fucking white liberals, and this is what pisses me off about white liberals, is they're probably the most secretly racist people in the world. Like,
oh, without a doubt.
Yeah, while they're like saying, oh, Trayvon Martin, it's like, while they're saying that, John was driving around New York listening to Bounty Killer. John is more black than all of these white liberals who go on talking about how Trayvon Martin is a saint. Do they know every single verse from Eric B. and Rakim's Follow the Leader? No, they don't. John does.
Well, you know,
I'm putting out a plea now. Super Mexican, if you're listening, please put Garrow on your show and make it a paid episode. I will pay for it. I swear I will pay for it. Everybody would.
You got to get him and Bill from that show in the same room.
Oh, God.
Dream come true.
It'd be like a Scanner's Head explosion, seriously.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. But see, it's like everything I say. Like, it's like I mean it, but I'm also like having fun with it. You know what I mean? It's sure. Like, because the one thing is, like, I think people take things too f-ing seriously. And, you know, sometimes you just have to say the stuff and have fun with it, you know?
Mm.
Well, that's why we're the way we are on this show. Yeah. That's true. <Sure.
laughs> <Let's go. laughs> I think we better plug out.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You can find us at midnightmoviecowboys.com. Send us an email. We love hearing from you, even if you hate us, at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. And please, if you have a second, in fact, just take a second to go to iTunes and leave us a review with 5 stars. So even if it's a negative review, say whatever you want. But
leave
give
us a review
stars.
With any stars. Just leave us what your thoughts.
And
what
use
you
lots
think.
Of keywords, you know, just whatever's trending at the time. leave those in your review. Follow us on Twitter at MMCowboys, and you can find me on Twitter at HunterDeucing. You can find Stu on Twitter at TheRealRebel, and that's real like a reel of film. And you can find John Grace at RealJohnGrace, but that's R-E-A-L, John Grace.
Yes.
Not many people know this, but before John had that Twitter account, he actually was going for the Twitter handle No Limit Nigga, but unfortunately Trayvon Martin had it.
Yeah, I felt robbed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he went with real John Grace instead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, John was masquerading on Twitter as Richard Lococo for a while.
Yeah.
Until the powers.
I didn't control the account. So.
Oh, that's true.
You can find Garrow's other Twitter account at Real George Zimmerman.
George Zimmerman is on Twitter now.
Oh,
is he?
No, is he?
Yeah, he joined Twitter.
Cool.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a follow.
That's a follow.
Jesus.
Follow George Zimmerman on Twitter.
Can he be on the next episode?
Merry Christmas, everyone.
We can have him. You said you wanted to do all the Death Wish movies. Who would be a better guest than George Zimmerman?
Dude, if you got that, podcast gold.
Yep.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Can you imagine? That would be. George Zimmerman.
That's him an invite.
You know what? In three and a half years of doing this show, I'm very rarely shaking my head shocked. I'm doing it now. I really am doing it now. I got my head in my hands and I can't believe what I'm hearing. And I shock very, very rarely. Oh, God.
Tell us about how much he identifies with Paul Kersey.
God. All right.
I just see Jeff Goldblum's face everywhere.
All right. Let's wrap it up. Let's say Merry Christmas, everyone, after this. Can we even wish each other a Merry Christmas after what just happened? Should we is more the term. I think we could. All right.
I don't know. I thought there was a lot of Yuletide cheer in this episode.
Yes,
was. Yule turd, maybe. All right. Merry Christmas.
Well, all I got to say, if this does go out uncut, I am all ready to be the most hated person on the internet. I'm all ready for it.
I think you might have just found a new home to do it, really.
I just want to let...
Garrett, I'll tell you this. If you ever go and start your own podcast, I'm going to snatch you from the jaws of it and say, no, just join us instead.
Yeah.
Well, every time you guys want me on, just let me know. I'll come on and f*** everything up like I did today.
Yeah, let's see how the editing goes. I'm like, it's like, oh, he's never coming back. Oh, I can't wait to get him back.
Well, all I want to say is everyone who's pissed off, like anything I said, just remember, I'm the one with the black friend, not you. Remember that. I'm the one who's racially tolerant, not you. I have a black friend. Okay? That's all I gotta say.
And on that, like, let's say Merry Christmas, everybody. Even though by the time you get this, Christmas will have gone. I hope you have a Merry Christmas. I want to say a big thank you to all the people who do listen. We never do that, and we should do it a bit more often.
Yeah.
You know, the nameless and the faceless ones out there who either contact us or don't, you know, in some form or manner. We just want to say thanks for listening. I just noticed that I thought we don't thank the listeners, and we should, because no listeners, no show. And yeah, we
just. Well, I want to give a shout out to Christina in Canada who wrote me a very nice email talking about how she enjoys listening to the show.
Ah, very good. That's good.
Yeah. How do you put up with both of us and our crazy guest?
And also, we should also say if any sponsors out there want to start sponsoring this podcast, I think this episode would be a great one to start with. Dan Murphy's Liquors, we think you would be perfect.
Yeah,
send all the gift cards to Stuart, please.
Yeah, you know, we're a very audience friendly podcast. We never say anything too controversial. So please think about spending your ad dollars here. Thank you.
Yeah.
And also, in all honesty, there is now a PayPal donate button on the website, believe it or not.
Well, we need to be pushing that.
And honestly, there is a PayPal donate button, which I've set up now. So if you guys want to help out to keep the show going and help pay for the server fees and website fees and that, there are costs incurred with the show. Believe me, it's not just us jacking around and laughing and making jokes and talking about films here. We do have a lot of costs involved. So if you want to hit the PayPal button, donate whatever you want. It would be much appreciated to keep us going, because imagine what your lives would be without us. Probably a lot better off.
Much,
but
much more politically correct.
Fruitful, yeah.
What
probably.
Are global listeners? Don't we have listeners in different countries now?
We got them scattered all over the world. We know you're out there, because Stuart here checks the... he knows. He's like Santa. He knows.
Yes, so, please let us know where you're listening from so we can offend you with jokes about that.
Yeah, go like us on Facebook and tell us about the most offensive moment you've heard.
Good night. Let's sign off.
Adios.
Mahalo.
'Garrow, you can't run for office now.
I can't take out Obama and become president of the United States.
No. The country's not ready for an Armenian president.
Ah, oh, damn it.
We're just not ready for that.
We're ready for a black president, but an Armenian we just can't handle.
We just can't do that.
You know, we're ready for a gay black president who had sex with Kumar from Harold and Kumar, but we can't have an Armenian president.
You know he did. You know he and Kumar were butt buddies. You know.
Oh, of course. I know exactly where this is.
You ever been there?
I've been past it, but I've never eaten there.
Okay, never eaten there.
My black friend's eaten there. He said it's good.
I'm sure.
And I'm not sitting around. My black friend did eat there once, and he told me it was good.
Really?
Yeah.
They had the hottest fried chicken on the planet.
Oh, there was about like 2 months ago. We went out to get somebody to eat, and we went to Popeyes, and he's just there eating his fried chicken, and I'm just sitting there, and I just look at him, and I said, "Right now, you are a goddamn stereotype."
You know what? I'm actually. I just realized I'm still recording. I'm going to stick that at the very end of the show after the music. So if your black friend actually listens to the show, he's going to hear it.
Ain't got time to listen to white people.
There we go. This is a real like. Check this out here. You guys want to see? Hey, you guys want to see what they at Christmas looks like?
Oh my god!
This is where they all sit around and have Christmas.